And he said, "Do you think you can do that?" And I said, "Well, we get tax advice now." So I took a chance. I knew nothing.
I had a 401k, that was about it, but took a chance and I loved it. It was one of those things where it's not a job. I love what I do. It's only a job if you'd rather be doing something else. And people will say, when am I going to retire? And I do like having a little bit more free time. And I've just hired, I guess, one of your own, Eric Ragland, has worked about a year now. And I always tell people that you always hire people smarter than yourself. And yet again, I've done that. So, but no, it's a great, we have a great company, and the company is the employees. And it is, it's like family to me. We've done very well. I guess I've hired everybody in there. So it falls to me. But what I'm going to talk to today, boy, this is hard. Maybe I keep my hand right. Sorry. Well, then I'll start singing, you know. Regrets. I have a few. Sorry. Please, no tipping. I'll stay with my day job. But the going to talk about starting your own business, because what I do every day is evaluate different investments, different companies, different people call in, what about this company, what about that company? And I love the thought process of what makes this company better than this company. And you can see it on the local level, you can see it on the national level, you can see companies that are, wow, they really get it. And you can see companies that are drifting. Some companies are no longer with us. And so what I'm going to talk about today is starting your own business. I did not, my first job was J.C. Bradford & Company out of Nashville. Now, I was an employee with them. Great company. Jimmy Bradford had an open door policy. He was very approachable. We did not have J.C. Bradford mutual funds. We just offered advice. So that's where I cut my teeth with that. But then through the years, J.C. Bradford got bought by Payne Webber, and then they got bought by UBS. I moved UBS, the United Bank of Switzerland, and I thought, okay, this is pretty far from Buffalo Valley. So I moved to Prudential Securities. They got bought by Wachovia Securities, and then they got bought by Wells Fargo Securities. So I compare it. It's almost like if you got married every 2 years. It's, you know, most women are, you know, have 90% of the same, you know, features, but personalities are different. It was a new computer system every two years. It's the equivalent of if any of you women came to my house to cook Thanksgiving dinner. We pretty much have 95% of the same things in our, same things in our kitchen, but we don't have it at the same place. So imagine how frustrated you'd be. Why would he put the, well, it's not me. Why would Christy put the mixing things here? They go here. That's the way, like I say, most of my career. So with Wells Fargo, I decided they wanted us to be more salesmen. I started my own business at Maple Cross. And through the years, I've watched what works, what doesn't. And so we've been at, Maple Cross has been in existence 11 years now. And so I'm going to talk about starting your own business. First of all, what is your motivation? These young kids, because I always ask people, I have this reputation at my house when we worked in the youth at church. We'd have all the high school kids over. And I remember one day, Sunday morning, I have four daughters, and we're all sitting around the table eating. And they said, "Dad, today when everybody comes over this afternoon, can you do us a favor?" And I'm like, they wanted me to cook something. You know, I said, "Sure, what do you want?" And they said, "Would you not ask all the boys what their plan is for their life?" And I was like, "Oh, disappointment." I said, "Well, do I do that?" Every head, including my wife, was like, mm-hmm. I said, "Okay, but they should have a plan." But young people will say, you know, they want to own their own business. And the first thing I will ask is, "What time?" They'll say, "I don't know." And then my second question, "Well, why do you want your own business?" And I say, and then they'll say, "Well, I just like to work a half day." And I said, "Oh, you will. 12 hours Yeah, but you know, it's that's not the reason to start your own business. I've never seen anyone successful that I want to do less by doing that. Now, it does give you control of your time, but then there's a price you pay for that time. You know, some people say, I want to make more money. I guess that's legitimate if you can get into a business. But again, if you're doing it for the money, I'm going to say your success is probably not going to be. Control of your time, that's the benefit of owning your business. I always ask people, you know, after what's your plan, what's your passion? What do you think about when you're not having to think about anything else? And a lot of times you'll find what your passion is. I can say I'm passionate about what I do. I would rather, you know, if I'm sitting around, I would rather be just reading nerdy economic stuff. Sorry, judge if you want to. But what's your passion? Because with your passion, you can find out what's your why. Why do you do what you do? And if you're passionate about your product or your service, whether you are a bakery, a tax preparer, whatever, you will be successful. I truly believe that if you have a work ethic, you know, if you say, you know, I want to be the best pediatrician, for instance, you know, then you probably will be. If you're inquisitive, you want to be the best. Speaking of that, our four daughters, Dr. Franklin, I don't know what his first name is.
Lloyd.
Rock star. I went with my wife once, one of our daughters. I don't really like going to doctors because that's where all the sick people are, but this was pre-COVID anyway. So I went with her, and he was a rock star. I'm not here. I don't work for Dr. Franklin. But, I mean, he would answer just his demeanor. He would sit down, and his demeanor was to answer every question, and she can answer a lot of questions. He would explain, well, this is how this works, and this works, and this works. And I just sat there, and I thought, wow. To my wife, she was the only one in the world in that 20 minutes. And then my second thought was, how can you run your whole day this way? But he was. He literally, I've never heard anybody say anything negative to Dr. Franklin. My optometrist, Steve Richardson, he's that way. I mean, he'll take time to explain everything. Why would I leave? You know, if someone said, well, we do it $50 cheaper, it's like, I really don't care. You know, you could say I do it almost free and be like, I still don't care. Because they're passionate about what they do. They try to be the best. They stay continued, educated, and they're going to see you through your problems. So if you're looking at something you want to do, whether it's baking muffins or whatever, you know, are you passionate about it? And is there room for improvement in your product, in the product or service? Because if someone else is already doing it and doing it well, what is going to make, you know, what is your sweet spot that you're going to come into? Is there more room for the market? Like if I were graduating today, so I'm going to be a pediatrician and I'm going to model myself after Dr. Franklin, I think I would be successful. Is there room for more people, or is your product, you know, if you said I'm going to compete with Walmart, you know, I'd probably say, you know, maybe the bridge is out. But what is your competitive advantage? And if you all own businesses, what is your all's competitive advantage? You know, what makes your business any special than, you know, 500 others? And if you don't know what that is, I've put a couple examples. Service merchandise. How many people remember service merchandise? Service merchandise, I used to shop there. They were in between. You know, weren't they? They just, if you say, okay, what was their competitive advantage? Anybody have a remote answer? Yes, sir.
Service.
Well, it's in their name. Okay. Why do you think they did not succeed? See, I have a theory that they were kind of in between. They weren't as cheap as Walmart. but they weren't as good a quality as a Dillard's or something. They were kind of in between, which is you've got to pick one in those. The same for in Cookeville, Ruby Tuesdays. My wife and I, we were starving. We went to Ruby's Tuesdays, and food is important to me. I like to eat, but at the same time, I look at the cars in the parking lot, you know, it's like, okay, let's go over here. So we went to Ruby Tuesdays. That was the least people there, and this, I guess, was a sign there. But we went in, we're both hungry, and after, you know, that 2 or 3 minutes, what are you going to order, what am I going to order? I said, I don't know, I hadn't found it yet. And 2 or 3 minutes, well, what are you going to order? I don't know. We ended up getting the salad bar. And I said, you know, this is not really good, because I have this, I do every business I walk in. I said, this is not really good. I mean, we came in, we both were hungry, but we didn't really have something that we wanted, you know, and that we ended up getting the salad bar, which to me is like, that's the fallback white flag. Sorry. I mean, it's like, we're going out for a salad. Anyway, so it closed in there. It closed in Cookeville, which, you know, I hate to see any restaurant close. That's someone's money. But then on the flip side, we go to Cheesecake Factory. Anybody familiar with Cheesecake Factory? Okay, I go there, and, you know, after that 3 or 4 minutes, what do you want? That's like, I've narrowed it down to 5 things. I don't see how they can have a menu with sushi to whatever. I mean, I look at that and think, what is their profit? I mean, how do you keep so much stuff fresh? Especially when you, but it's a great experience, and it's one of those things. Now, they have a menu that's very broad. I don't know how many, it would have to be in the 100, 150 ingredients to cover all that. And so I look at that. That's stuff you have to order. Unlike a Mexican restaurant that has 9 ingredients. Or, you know, if you think about it, you make a burrito. You want a chimichanga, you drop it in the fryer, like, here you go. I mean, it's literally, it's 9 or 10 things. And that's it. I mean, how much? Sorry. I love Mexican food, by the way. I proved my wife wrong. We were in a mission trip to Mexico, because she asked me, where you want to eat? And she learns now to say, where you want to eat, not Mexican, because I always throw it out. And she said, well, you can't eat Mexican every day. I proved her wrong, because I was in Chapala, Mexico, and it was like, yep, honey, you can, even for breakfast. But with that, with any business, any service, there's 3 factors in your all's business too. Price, quality, service. Those are the 3 things any business. You don't get the best quality, the best service at the best price, even though people will want that. You know, why can't you do this and you can't do it? You can't have all three. So you're going to give up something somewhere. And even if you can't compete with someone bigger than you in price, quality and service will bridge that gap. My optometrist, Steve Richardson, I've never called around to ask what the other people charge. I mean, now, you know, if it was $1,500 or something, I'd be like, okay, wait a minute. But the same for my dentist. I'm happy with them. Now, if they start dropping the ball, then, for instance, well, I did trade barbers, I guess. Is that, yeah, sorry. The lady cut my hair. I picked the lady right beside our office building. My hair's got to be easy to cut. I mean, it's like a lawnmower, weed eater. But anyway, if y'all know her, I'm sorry, maybe I should. So anyway, I fired her. But it was because when I was getting my hair cut, the last time it was like 3 different calls she took while I was sitting there. And, she has another business, and that was, you know, I thought, well, I've spent 10 or 12 minutes just sitting here, and I thought, you know, I don't mind paying, but I quick turn. So now I'm over at Mr. Wayne's School of Barber, because I think there's only 2 weeks difference between a good haircut and a bad haircut with my hair, so go in there and roll the dice, you know. Oh, by the way, I've broken the code. It goes like a horseshoe. Stay on this side. They start over here. So, because I would say, what about this guy? You know, it's like the catcher, you know, that giving the pitcher the signal, you know, I walk in like, well, this guy's not been like, no. It's like, okay, I'll wait for the person over there. So price, quality, and service. Pick two. You don't get all three. And investments, as an aside, it's liquidity, return, and safety. Those are the three, all investments, liquidity, return, and safety. People say, well, you never lose money in real estate. So what are you giving up in real estate? You have a return. If you wait, you know, if you bought something in 2006 and tried to sell it in 2009, you real estate people could say, yeah, I don't, you know, if you bought it at the top, sold it a year later, I'm not sure. Especially if it was a condo in Las Vegas or Florida. But if you hold it long enough, but you don't have liquidity in real estate. That's the thing you give up. What about a CD? Well, you have safety. You have liquidity. You can break it and pay a penalty. You can get your money anytime, but you don't have a return. With stocks, you hold it kind of like real estate. You have a return. If you own good companies, you have liquidity. Safety is more, I look at it more like the fluctuation. I mean, and this is not investment advice, but you know, Dollar General is going to be building more Dollar Generals. I mean, Walmart's going to be building more Walmart. It's just, now, if you buy it today, and these people that day trade, I don't understand that. That would be like I'm closing on the property at 9 a.m. and I've got an absolute auction at 3 p.m. I hope that works for you. That's what day trading is. It's not good. But getting back to your company, what is your moat? We all have moats. Steve Richardson, Dr. Franklin, their moat is good service, good price. They do what they say they're going to do when they're going to do it. That's the moat. Because somebody could come in and undercut them in price, they're not going to get me. Somebody could come in and do it for free, and then I'd really be concerned. I'm like, why are you doing it for free? But so no. So we all have those customers that we can have repeat customers, unless somebody in here owns a funeral home, and that's get one shot. So, and then what competitor threat do you have? You know, the local five and dimes. Remember that when you're a kid? Okay, Walmart comes to town, you can't compete. So sometimes if your only advantage is price, that's probably not the best place for you. And then, with Walmart, you have Amazon. So everybody's cutting into everybody else. Next question is, how sticky are your customers? How sticky? When I was on the church board, I kind of tried to incorporate these into our church. If the mom, they're both attending service, the preaching. If mom is in the choir, dad's an usher, you've got plugs. You know, so maybe this Sunday, I didn't really like, preacher was stepping on our toes. You're probably not going to leave because you got plugs. Your kids are plugged in, mom's in the choir. I don't know why I put dad's in the choir, mom, whatever. So you got all these different plugs. It's sticky versus you just come to the service and you leave. I get offended. I'm out the door. So businesses are that way. Sandy, our point of contact, she's great. When I hired her, bubbly personality, clients would come in. I mean, she's brand new. Clients would come in and she'd come back and say, the Joneses are here. And it's like, okay, let me wrap up. So I'd come out and she'd be talking with them. And so I'd meet with them. And then after they left, I said, how do you know the Joneses? It's like, I just met them. And it was that part of just, she's very personal. She does a great job at what she does, her task, but she's a great front person. And it's one of those where I think clients would fire me, but they probably keep me sometimes as well. I like Sandy. But in your business, your employees are really the face of you as well. Because years ago, and I really hate to do this, I had to let someone go because they just weren't doing it. And, I had two or three clients that said, I think that was a wise decision. I was getting ready to move my business. And you know what? They never said anything to me. And I was like, oh, my goodness, what else do I not know that I don't know? And so with every business, You know, sometimes just try to see it from your customer's eyes. When we moved to our current office, I just went out there and sat in the lobby one time. I forgot which employee, like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm just sitting there saying, well, what's it like a client comes in here? What do they see when they sit here? So your customer service, your product, your personnel, and the quality of what you do, no matter what you do. And a lot of that is just things we do control, if you think about it. You can't control supply shortages right now, but you can control your people. But for your business plan, if you're going to start a business, I'm going to do this, it's my passion. First of all, you come up with a business plan. And I like numbers, I like math. You know, if you're growing pumpkins and your cost of to grow a pumpkin is $2 and your plan is to sell them for $1, you don't need a big truck, you know, to keep that truck as small as possible. So a lot of times it's good just to see what the numbers are involved. And some people hate numbers. I love numbers. That's to me, show me the numbers. And what are other businesses doing? You know, if you said, I'm going to sell my pumpkins for $2 and the rest of the market, they're selling them for $4, you know, that would be a red flag to say, well, am I just going to make a whole lot of money and everybody else, you know? So what's up with that? For us at Maple Cross, our clients are generally, the majority, probably 50 and older. One of my pet peeves, no phone trees. Someone answers the phone. Because as our clients get older, like my name's Bennett Jared, half my acquaintances call me Jared Bennett. Could you imagine if it says, dial the last name of your client? It'd be like, I don't even know, Bennett, what kind of name is it? Anyway, so the phone rings more than two or three times. I think Eric can tell you, I'm looking around like, how many people have to work here? Because that's just very important to me. Someone answers, because when clients call, they need something. And that's our time to shine. And I really hate phone trees, by the way, when I call somewhere else. A quick question, yes or no. So anyway, and our clients, as they get older, our particular business, it's like a marriage. We, until death do us part. I mean, I really, with the business we're in, it's like that. We help them with estate planning, and then we assist with the estate plan itself. But whatever business you're in or want to start, what do other companies do well? And where are they lacking? Where is their little niche where you can to get in there and get the sales? Are you offering sales or advice? You know, what does the marketplace need? Then you drop down to what type of business entity. Now, I'm not here to give legal advice, but you have sole proprietor, LLCs, S-Corp, partnerships. Just keep in mind, the sole proprietor is probably my least favorite, because it's, if you put it in LLC, you've got a little bit more planning. Sole proprietor, we have one client, he passed away. He owned a business just in his name, and the parents didn't have a will. So mom, dad, six-year-old son. Dad dies unexpectedly. They sold his business in his name for $600,000. They didn't have a will, but in the state of Tennessee, everybody has a will. They sold the business $600,000. The mom gets $300,000. The six-year-old son got $300,000 because they didn't have a will. So everybody has a will. If you say, well, I don't have a will, yes, you do. It's probably not the one you want. And that was crazy. And I watched her. She handled that so much better than I would have. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? So I'm not trying to give, just make sure your plan is a part. Partnerships, if you're in a general partner with somebody, you are liable for all their stuff. So that's probably not a good thing. And if you start your business, don't skimp on your CPA. Don't skimp on your legal advice. I mean, some people do that. I've had clients do that. I've had clients that need a estate plan, need some trust set up. And they got all this money, and then they'll come out, well, you know, that attorney you recommend, they're going to charge me $1,500. And I'm thinking, this is everything. this is everything. Now, I don't get anything from attorneys. I just tell them which ones know their stuff. Because if you called every attorney in town, in this town probably, do you do wills? They'd all say, yes, you know. How many did you do last year? Two. That's not, I would just say no. And on the flip side, if most people do estate planning, if I was accused of murder, that wouldn't be the person I would call to defend me either. So again, the tax preparer and your attorney, legal advice, don't skimp on that. Then where's the location of your business? Does location add value? And in today's world, you know, isn't it funny how the last 20 years location is more almost online as much as it is, you real estate guys, location, it's still good, but, you know, where is it convenient? Now, for us, we're on Neal Street. We don't really need location. I would be scared if somebody walked in our office door and didn't know a single person in our office said, I brought you $1 million to invest. I'd be thinking, what? You don't know me. So we get, our business grows from referrals. So I'm fine. We're in the Mike Swallows building, the Swallows building across from Planet Fitness. We should all be more fitter, but don't judge. We're right across the street from that. But we're in the back part of the building, convenient, but then not on the street. You know, we don't have to be. No one just drives by and sees that. I always, and I know the people that run it, Winn L. Lee Lumber on, over on West. You know, they built Winn L. Lee Lumber. They sell molding and stuff back when all that was pasture. And now, if you think about it, they're sitting there. Nobody drives by and like, well, you know, we're going to Kohl's, but, you know, let's go get some molding or something. You know, so at some point I keep waiting, and I haven't had this conversation with them, but, you know, the retail needs to go in there. Not, you know, nobody, I don't drive by and be like, oh, look, septic tanks. You know, let's go and look at those. So, funny story on septic tank. Oh, this goes out live. Well, okay. I put my mom, we redid our spring, and once she realized the tank we were using is a brand new septic tank, she kept calling it the cesspool. I said, Mom, you got to call it something. She's like, well, you put that cesspool in. Like, you're never going to have people over at your house again if you don't quit that. Sorry. But it works fine. It's fine. So you guys won't be coming for Thanksgiving this year. Location, you know, like a restaurant, location is very important. I remember Bobby Q's used to be a neighbor in the old Bobby Q's up on Washington. My wife's grandmother owned that house there, and we moved back to Cook. We lived there. And it was kind of funny, the location there, everybody would come in and be like, how do you stand that smell? And we would say, what smell? But when they moved downtown, it was one of those, it wasn't on Restaurant Row. I felt a little sorry for Mike because it basically lunch traffic around the square, it was hard to be in mind. So restaurants, yes. A doctor, maybe not so much, I don't think. Dr. Franklin, we would have gone wherever, you know, and he did move his office a couple times. Financial advice, my CPA. No, I don't. It's not drive-by business. So, you know, look at that. And how many employees will you need? And your employees are very important. I joke, but not really. I hire people smarter than me, better than me, and try to convince them to work for me. And it's really worked out good. I'm one of those people, I would rather have one employee too many than a half employee too few. Because one bad experience is terrible. How many people have bad experience lately in restaurants? You know, you go in, how long's the wait? 30 minutes. Well, can we just sit right up here? Like, no, don't have servers, you know? And it's like, wow. And I think that's driving that takeout business. Except my wife kind of got a little thing. She was really wanting a steak, you know? And I'm like, babe, that's illegal. You can't take a steak home. You gotta eat that. She got a steak. Anyway, but you know what I'm saying? I think that's driving that takeout business because if you're going to wait 20 or 30 minutes, but everything's changing now in the digital world. What's the damage if you're underemployed as far as what's the damage? You know, if you're older, that's monetary. If you're under, that's a customer. So it depends on what type of business. The different positions you have, we all have different. I worked as a CPA, and I'm extroverted. Everybody in that office thought I was weird because I'm extroverted. And most CPAs are introverted. And so just talking to them, I made them nervous just because I would ask questions. And we'd go out and do an audit. And they, you know, you did everything payroll, or I counted utility poles at the city of Cooper once in July. I was the new guy, which was fine. I don't know why I had to wear a suit out there for that. But anyway, I let it go. But I was the guy you go in, well, you need to go ask the owner that. So I'd go ask the owner something, and I would say something like an extrovert, like, you know, how many years you've been in business? Well, I started this business 25 years ago. Do you know what I do? And I like, well, you make something. And, well, here, let me give you the tour of the plant. So we take the tour of the plant, and I'd come back in 45 minutes, and the other CPA's like, where have you been? I was like, well, I'm doing a little PR. I took the tour of the plant. And two or three other guys would be like, well, no one's ever asked me for the tour of the plant. And I'm like, well, did you ever ask? Have you ever spoken to me? Sorry. So that was another reason I think I got out of the CPA business. But the different personalities we all bring, and they're all strengths. I'm not saying one's other. I would not have, just doing tax returns the rest of my life, I don't think that would have fulfilled me. But I'm a big believer. I was a skeptic at first. The Myers-Briggs personality test. And then there's two or three others out there that the office we've taken. I don't know if you take it. I took one. It was like 45 questions. It was almost like when they printed that out, they were in my sock drawer. I'm just looking at that like, how can they know this? A little scary. But if you're hiring someone, I would highly recommend that. Because if this person's going to be your front person, they need to have that bubbly personality. That if they're having a bad day at home, you don't want them having a bad day with customers. Does that make sense? Ginger works at our office. She's the CFO, compliance. Everybody wears multiple hats. She is, I call her Safety G. Is she not the safest person on the planet? Everything's got to be down to the penny. She comes in my office. Now, what's that drawer? It's open over there. And I'm like, okay. She's going to live till she's 100, but she's great at what she does. If I switch those two, it would not be good. And you know what? More importantly, neither one of those two would be happy because they would be in a job that didn't fit their strengths. Now, I've heard a podcast, maybe it was a TED Talk, where someone said, only hire 5-star employees. 5 stars. And they said, the reason, you know, if you gave employees 1 through 5 stars, which are the worst ones for your company? And the crowd said, the 1 and 2s. And he said, no, they're not. The 1 and 2s are not your worst employees. The 1 and 2s, you're going to fire them, and everybody else there is going to breathe a sigh of relief. Like, whew, that Dino, he was a jerk. He's out the door. Your worst employees, and I never really looked at it this way, the 3s and 4s. Because they don't get you to where you're wanting to go, but they're not bad enough. It's kind of like the Sunday afternoon shirt. It's not dirty enough for the laundry basket, but not clean enough to go back in the drawer. Does that make, you know, you're just there. The 3s and 4s are the hardest ones because they're going to be there. And if you have to fire a 3 or 4, well, Bill was a nice guy. You know, I don't know why they had to let him go. So only hire 5s. And they're out there. You have to. Yes, they're out there. You just have to be choosy. I had a friend of mine. He was the largest employer in Putnam County at one time. He had a couple of rules. Number one, you hire for loyalty first. If somebody comes in your office, they've worked, you know, every 2 years they trade, and probably you could say in 2 more years they'll trade. It's kind of like the, tell me about your other job, they were jerks. Why'd you leave the job before that? They were jerks. Why'd you leave? So you want loyalty because you don't want to train somebody and then have to retrain somebody. But now there's some businesses out there that's almost, they keep their pay scale so low that they have a lot of turnover. We do 401ks and retirement plans in our business, and it's amazing how much turnover there is out there. Now, some industries you can't, you know, obviously that's just the way it is, but loyalty first, attitude second, skill set third, unless you do brain surgery, and you probably want to reverse those. Well, he's loyal, he's got a good attitude, he doesn't know anything about, he's a terrible surgeon, but sure, bring him on. So again, loyalty, attitude, skills. And what I found at our office is time, at some point, you got to pay your bills, but time becomes more important than money. I mean, we're very flexible because we have five people, but if someone, I've watched our employees take care of their elderly parents, dementia, building houses, you know, sometimes you got to go out and meet the cabinet guy. And you know, a lot of companies, you got to clock out. That's, you know, but if you're just going to be going, you know, hour, hour and a half, okay, make that happen and come back. That means a lot to people than just, I have a daughter who works for a bank. She gets 2 weeks off a year and she has to take 5 days straight since it's a bank. That's an old rule. I'm not sure why they have that today. The old rule in banking was you take 5 days off because if you're doing something, we'll catch it. But today in the digital world, the computer would catch it instantly. But it's hard for her, you know, if she needs to go to the doctor or something, it's almost like you got to plan that out. And of course, and it matters what type of business you're in. If you have a slot, you're a retail person, somebody's got to be there. But depending on your business, time at some point is more important than money. Pay your employees first, your suppliers second. You pay yourself last. That was, like I say, my mentor. And find a mentor. I would highly recommend mentors because it's someone you can ask and say, okay, I've got this situation. And they've probably already seen it. Your mentors, well, it's kind of like in the Bible. You've got people below you you're trying to pull up. You got people beside you you're trying to encourage. And then you got people above you that hopefully they're sowing down to you. You don't need a mentor that's on the level ground exactly the same experience as you have, in my opinion, in general. And then when you pay the employees, we do a lot of things in Maple Cross. I guess it's my CPA background. Like if I was going to give someone a $1,000 raise, let's say they're doing good. Well, first of all, that $1,000 is business owner. I've got to withhold Social Security. I pay half of that. They pay half of Social Security. So I pay of $1,000, I would pay roughly $75, and then they would pay $75. And then they take that $1,000 home in a 20% bracket, that's $200. So wait a minute, I'm trying to give you $1,000, $275 is $150, $200 to the federal is $200. So $350 just went to the government. I'm just trying to give you $1,000. So what we do, we raise the match on our 401k. So if I match an employee $1,000, I write that $1,000 off, that $1,000 goes in their account. So that's a way to get to where I need to be, where they need to be without getting Uncle Sam, because Uncle Sam's so busy. The funny thing on Uncle Sam, I keep my CPA. Last fall, I was at a CPA conference in Washington, D.C. The IRS commissioner came out and talked to us. COVID hit in March 2020, which would have been the 2019 returns. As of last fall, they're still working on 2019 returns. They're trying to hire 10,000 agents, but the price they're wanting to pay, of course, an agent, you just can't pull someone right out of school that know. I just sat there and thought, what a mess. I'm not recommending if you want to do something crazy on your tax return, this is probably the time to do it. But they are so far behind. So when they say they're hiring 10,000 agents, it's not, he said that, it's not so we do more. He said so we can process more. Because there were CPAs sitting around me. He's like, we're waiting to see how they handle this so we can figure out what we're doing this year. And then the Bitcoin thing. There's Bitcoin millionaires that are... they're about to have an education because if you wrote it up and sold it and you've wrote it down, but you owe all that income tax and now it's gone down so far, you may not have enough money to p- pay your taxes. Now, the way the tax code works, you make $1 million this year, Uncle Sam says, that's great, pay the tax on $1 million. If you lose $1 million this year, you can write off $3,000 for the next 333 years. It's so if you make a lot of money, but before you can pay that tax, you lose all that, it's a nightmare. Another thing we do at our company is the, like the 401k match where you're getting 100%, is the HSAs. I bumped our healthcare up to the high deductible, which is $6,000. Everybody's eyes rolled. But I said, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you $3,600 to put in your HSA, and I'm going to do one in December for this year and one in January for next year. So you are sitting on your catastrophic full deductible. It's in your account. Now, I can write off that. You don't have to pick it up as income. If you don't use that money, it stays in your account. So everybody at our company is on board. Like, this is how we roll. This is why I do that. Because there, you know, if you're looking at your W-2 as your income, you got to add all this other stuff. So again, there's other ways to compensate employees other than just here's money. And like I say, as we all get older, that HSA and retirement is going to be more important. And I found happy employees. Well, the old saying, happy wife, happy life. A happy employee is you have a better business if your employees are happy. So that the success I've had has been through the people that have worked for me. And like I say, I've been very blessed. The Lord has blessed me in my company. So thank you. I hope I haven't bored you. But thank you. Any questions? Do I have time for a question or two?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes, sir.
Do you help people set up their businesses?
When you say that, I don't mind sharing the experiences and making recommendations.
It's new people coming into town, just retiring, decide they want to open up a pizza shop. Need some good small business advice.
I could give the small business advice. I could recommend a CPA. I could recommend an attorney that would help them set up the structure, the accounting side of that. Because I truly believe when you start with a good foundation, then you don't have to unlearn anything. It's kind of like our Christian walk. You know, if you grew up with a good foundation, I mean, how many times are we working with people and they almost have to unlearn, you know. A few years ago, I had a client that he said, well, you know, the Bible says the Lord helps those that help themselves. And I thought, no, it doesn't say that. Well, it says something like that. And I was like, no. Yeah, especially if it's a restaurant. Don't worry about it. Just, they'll be here.
Sounds like a scripture.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Would you mind just telling us briefly what do you do at your wealth management business?
Good question. We help people manage their wealth for the most part. And then we do some retirement plans. And that's just a lot of times making sure their investments are where they need to be. And that's been the hardest part the last 2 or 3 years with COVID. I've done this for 30 years, but I never had any pandemic experience. And quite frankly, I'm going to be honest. I went to school at Baxter. That's not a word I really used until about 2 years ago. Yeah. So that, and then with inflation, our government, our debt to GDP is 130%. And this is not political. This is mathematical. You know, years ago, we should have been making good decisions, and we missed that opportunity. Going forward, we're going to have hard decisions that we're at a place to where if we lose the reserve currency of the U.S. dollar, then all of our lives and everybody in this room is going to change. I mean, you look to places like Venezuela, whatever, and you think, well, that can't happen to us. We're Americans. We're at 100%, 130% you know, debt to GDP. And now the Fed keeps talking about raising rates. The Fed has two, you know, they've got all this stuff they say, inflation down to 2%. There's three ways out of our government's debt, just like my family. If my wife and I went out, we spent $100,000 on credit cards. Okay, she and I would have three ways out. One, we grow our way out. We would get extra jobs. I can mow yards. And I have to say, I think under the previous administration, I can't defend tweets and whatever, but the economy was rolling. But the problem was our borrowing and spending was rolling. So we couldn't grow our way out. That's like my wife and I. We got extra jobs, but then we got extra spending. So we can't grow. Number two is default. And my wife can't do that. Like, we're just going to tell Visa, we're not paying. Well, the future's cut off because we don't have, you know, we don't have any more credit. So we can't grow. We can't default. Number three is you inflate. So what the Fed is doing, I don't care what they say, that is our only option, is to inflate our way out. And so who does that hurt? That hurts, you know, if Aunt Sally's got $100,000 CD earning 2% and inflation's 8. Again, this is not politics, it's math. You cannot, if you go back to 19, now you go back to 73, 74, we had the oil embargo. And a lot of people blame inflation on the Saudis. But why did the Saudis raise oil from 6 to 30? It happened in 71 when Nixon took us off the gold standard for the dollar. So the Saudis are not stupid. It's like, we're going to print money. If you look at the chart of the value of a dollar in 71, that's when it went down. So that's when they said, well, if you're just going to print money, instead of $6 a barrel, give us 30. So it's easy to say, well, they did it. I'm one of those people, I think the government creates about as many problems. And the scariest part is, and then they say, we have a solution. but with all that, I would, if you know anybody who, of course, mortgages have spiked up here. But, you know, I told everybody, if you hadn't locked in your mortgage at 3%, that is manipulated down. If we were going to buy... If we were going to buy First National Bank, and you know, we could borrow money, you know, balance sheet wise, and we said, well, we'd like to have 3% for 30 years financing. They, well, of course you would. Well, why is housing that way? It's just manipulated down. So we're in a position going forward that anything financial, because for 40 years, interest rates have been coming down. 1980, the 10-year treasury was 15.4%. And I had a friend that he was in the business back then. He said, you couldn't give those away. Because everybody said, well, I'm not tying my money up 10 years for 15%. And that was the mindset. So it's come down today. It's around, what, 3.2? So interest rates and the value of your bonds is a seesaw. So for 40 years, rates are coming down. Bonds have done really well. Well, now we're at a place rates are coming up. And for our retired clients, we don't use a lot of bonds. Bonds year to date are down 10%, I think. 11.5. So you see what I'm saying? Because if you remember that feeling when rates came down, if you locked in a 5-year rate at 7%, you think, and rates went on down to 6, and you thought, yeah. That feels good. It's the opposite now. I mean, someone asked me the other day, they had a 3-year, 2.5% CD. And I was like, I would not do that. Just because if rates keep going up, you know, the value is going to go down. But we're in trying times right now. So I would, you're going to see the value of your dollar drop. I mean, I hate to say that because this is our home team, United States, but we just can't keep spending money like we do. In fact, if you add up the Social Security, Medicare, all the things we have to spend money on, and compare it to last year's tax receipt, you know, that's and defense, there's no margin to pay this off. So, sorry, I'm Debbie Downer here on the end. That's not, you know what, I took speech class, Dr. Jenkins would be, just be like, you bombed it right at the end.
You're good. Nobody's got nothing walked out.
Oh,
I guess that's true. Maybe you said it's $5 charge if you do, right? They keep looking at you. Now? Can we now? Yes.
So would you advise that you pay off debt or invest?
That's a very good question. And I'm always upfront with people. When mortgage rates got below 3%, I went to my local bank and withdrew the equity out of my house. My dad is somewhere in Buffalo Valley in that little family cemetery just kicking right now. I could, because I look at it like I had negative carry. And by negative carry, I mean real estate, there's a shortage of real estate. Real estate's going up 5, 10, 50, not 3. And I can go down and pay that all off tomorrow. It's just one of those, it was manipulated down. And we're seeing it now move up. So, it depends if it's locked in or not. Now, there's two schools of thought on the future. One is we're going to have inflation, and we are for an undetermined amount of time. And then, you know, what's going to happen on the backside of that? Deflation. Our fertility rate in this country is less. It's like 1.68. Now, the fertility rates means me and my wife need to have 2.1 kids to keep us level. That 0.1 is for death, disease, you know, childhood, teenage car wrecks, whatever. 2.1. We're at 1.7. That means we're shrinking. Now, going back in the agricultural days, it was like a chevron. You know, mom and dad, they had 6 kids. And they married somebody with 6 kids, and then so those 12 people got married and they had 6 kids. So we're spreading out as a country, and you see this even in the developing world, people are having less children, so your population is declining. It's almost like the way the chart is, it looks like a pig and the python. It's coming, it's the tail end. I always look to Japan. There's a website, CIA, and it's actually the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA World Factbook. And if you look at Japan, they're 9 years older than us on average, because we had the baby boom generation. They lost the war, so they didn't have their soldiers coming back in mass like we did. So they're 9 years older than us. So you can kind of see what they're doing and see what our future looks like. I'm very pro-immigration. You know, if you come through the door, not, you know, just the right way. But you know, I get so aggravated at our government. I've been working with Ahihik, which is south of Guadalajara, a girl's orphanage. I have 4 daughters. Anyway, I guess that's why I go down, and these girls have been sex trafficked. I don't know who these people are, but yeah, there's a lot of sin in the world. But anyway, so as these girls get older, you know, my whole deal with everybody is like, there's a big world out there, you know, just God's got a big plan for you. And I asked Miss Becky, she runs the orphanage. I said, when these girls get seniors in high school, could I just bring them up to Tennessee and just, you know, kind of expand it? You can't get a visa. And I'm like, well, no, I mean, I'll pay the legal stuff. She said, no, even with that, you can't get. Is that what you found? And I said, no, wait a minute. I'm not the smartest guy. But I see thousands of people crossing the border, and I'm saying, look, these 5 here, I will be responsible. If I need to put money, you know, in a bond or something that says if they don't come back, you keep. It's just like you can't get it. And I'm thinking, what? Anyway, sorry. Maybe I am talking politics. But that's been a historical. So I see stuff like this, and I'm thinking, well, do we make it so hard that those people just say, you know what, I'm just going to go across? I don't know, but I'm pro-immigration because we have to have somebody waiting on these tables right here.
Front rows are empty.
Pardon?
Front rows are empty.
Yeah. I mean, you go to a restaurant, they're not there. Now, one of the things I have seen in Mexico is the people working down there, they're working. Yeah. Would you?
They have the longest work week in the world.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah, I watched the couple of people that clean up the orphanage, and I mean, if I'm there for 3 hours, they never stop. I mean, they're doing stuff, and I'm like, well, I'm going to drop you off at the border. I'm going to go through and come back around. No, no, I was just kidding. But no, I just, that work ethic, we need that. But So we have a shortage of workers and no plan whatsoever to see. Now, I to solve some of this, like, okay, if you can prove you've worked for the last 5 years, you go to the front of the line, we'll sign you up. But for some reason, people yell amnesty, and I can see that argument on the other side, like, they're here. You know, people say, well, we need to ship them back. I'm like, we don't have buses for 10 million people. If you had them all gathered up in one place, how would you even feed them? It's like they're here. So anyway, sorry. I guess that was political. Any other questions? So going forward with your all's business, how is the digital platform going to change your business? The pros, the cons. If you don't have a social presence, you know, you read where the wrong people start posting things negative about some random business. And it's really tough because it's like cyberbullying. I can't imagine being in school with everything. I mean, we had bullies at Baxter. You know, eventually you made it out to the playground. Don't judge. I mean, it's just, okay, we're working this out today. But, you know, today it's brutal. And the same for businesses, if you get labeled something. So I think going forward, there's going to be a cost. And I'm going to get into these spiritual projections that I think it's easy to see looking out that it may cost us something to be counted a Christian. Because 50 years ago, you had people going to church that really weren't believers, but that would help their business. And I think, you know, in the first church in Acts, you know, if we're all sitting here and we knew the Roman soldiers coming here were all dead, 100% convinced, I could look at you guys and be like, you know, you guys are my brothers. We're in this together. So I don't know. You can kind of feel that. But in the middle of this, there's going to be pockets of revival that, you know, if we don't waver, if we don't break, I mean, because that's our witness and people are going to be watching. And if we fold up and look just like the world, then what message? You know, if bankruptcy is the same inside the church as outside, if divorce is the same, then what for somebody? And this is what I was telling my wife. You know, we grew up, everybody knew the Bible story pretty much in the majority. Well, you got kids that they've never been to church. And our whole language, you know, are you glad for the redemptive blood of Jesus? I mean, they're going to be looking, I don't know what you just said. So we got to start with, is there a God? Is the church ready for that? I mean, do we take a blank piece of paper and say, who are we trying to reach? Just like customers. And really, you know, why not? We use our business sense for our business. Why don't we use it for the church? Who do we need to be reaching and what message? Because, you know, do people even understand when we are we speaking? So it's kind of like in marriage. Funny story. We're going to eat one night. We're driving down Restaurant Row in Cookeville. And my wife says, where would you like to eat? And I said, let's go to Old Charlie's. And she said, we ate there last week. So I'm driving and I'm thinking, what did I get there last week? And we're getting closer to Old Charlie's. And I'm like, I think I got that prime rib. Man, it was really good. So we pull in to Old Charlie's and all of a sudden the air conditioner must have kicked in because the temperature in the car dropped 25 degrees and it was chilly. And I looked over there and I was like, what's wrong? And I said, well, what's wrong? She said, I said, we ate there last week. And I said, you did. And that's code for we ate there last week. We're not going to eat there tonight. And I was like, and that was, I said, honey, just pretend you're talking to a 6-year-old. Okay, I just keep it simple. I just like, you're mad at me. I don't even know what I'm doing. Sorry. So you know what, when VBS or whatever, when we're, you know, or just your neighbor, when you're talking to them, what, it's almost like we need a course on, okay, well, how do we approach that? Because we need to approach it in a way that they receive it. Because if we speak what we know, it'd be like me getting in here talking about PE ratios, whatever, and I'm sure I've done that with clients. And they're like, I have no idea what he's saying. He seems like he knows what he's talking about. But anyway, so, but there, the good thing about it, Pastor Eddie Turner one time was preaching, and I heard him say, you know, when Tennessee, this will tell you how long ago, when they won the national championship, University of Miami, he watched that game, and he said the first, he watched it live, he's screaming, yelling at the TV, cheering, you know, knocking his tea glass over, cheering with it and everything. Loved it. We won. Great game. He said, you know, 10 years later, you know, I was flipping channels like, well, hey, this is about to start. I'll watch this game again. He said, I watched that whole game. I may have shifted in my chair a little bit. I didn't scream. I didn't yell. Why is that? Because he said, I know what how it ends. And he said, why don't we live our lives that way to where we know what the score is. Of course, when I played football at Upper, that wouldn't have been good because, like, yeah, we're going to lose again. let's just go, you know, Hail Marys every play because we're going to lose anyway. but, you know, do we live our lives that way just knowing that we win? So, anyway, sorry, I'm not trying to tell, just like I said, it's one of those, I wonder if the language we use is receptive to people who have never set foot in church today. And how do you convince someone they're lost if they don't even know there's a God? So, because you could preach hell and brimstone, but they're looking at you like, bring it down a little bit, just, you know, so... Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you all.